Because he's got the truth right there. He had it absolutely nailed. He totally got it completely. But he was hundreds of years ahead of his time.
Well, yeah. And then, but you can go back before that about a century and you look at Friedrich Bastiat, right?
Yes, if he had the law. Yep. I homeschooled all three of my kids. They listened to that before we called them podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Space Tomatoes Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Havoc.
I'm the other guy, LX. Hello, welcome back, all those things.
Today we have with us a special guest, Gordon Phillips, a veteran currency trader, financial analyst, author of The Risky Reader, educator, public speaker, futurist, and consultant. Welcome to the show, Gordon. Mr. Phillips,
thank you, gentlemen. It is my pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So it seems to me, in looking through your stuff, you also play music?
I did, yeah.
A bassist?
I was a professional band leader till I was 40 years old in Boston.
Oh, really? Like big band or?
No, I started out on bass. R&B was my love.
Wonderful.
Soul, R&B, jazz. And then when I couldn't, it was difficult to be a band leader as a bass player because you were at the mercy of the keyboard player and drummers, and they have all the expensive equipment. So I taught myself keys. And then I was the first musician in Boston to use MIDI, which is digital musical interface. So I could sound like the Moody Blues with a two-piece setup, myself and a singer. And then I got bored with that and finally started an entertainment agency and had lots of weddings and bar mitzvahs, corporate events. I did that for a long time. And then one day I woke up and I wasn't having fun anymore making music for money. And that's when I learned how to invest. And that actually what happened was, we can get into this. A friend called me one day, a guy I knew from a business meetup, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He said, he was agitated. He said, "Did you know the Federal Reserve's not federal?" I said, "What? I got to go to the bank. What? He says, "Your fax machine on?" I said, "Yeah." Because that was state of the art in those days, right? Fax machine.
Oh, yeah.
I came home, the roll had run out. All these Supreme Court decisions on the... I went, "What?" I sat up till 2 a.m. reading it. My brain exploded. And 2 years later, I was crisscrossing the United States at freedom rallies doing lectures on constitutional taxation. From being a bass player. And then from there, I started getting into trading and investing and changed gears again. Then started a family. Had my first child at 53.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And the youngest right now is 20. And I'll be 80 in November.
Really?
I still have time.
So you do, well,
I better let my wife know.
Yeah, you hurry up.
Well, that's...
Go eat some oysters.
That's another area of expertise for you, right? Is de-risking health, right?
Well, I'm very active in and very eager learner, researcher into longevity, health extension, life extension. Lots of really crazy stuff we can talk about.
Wonderful.
If you want. Yeah.
Wonderful. So what made you decide to get into investing in the first place?
Well, I was very active in the constitutional revival movement in the early 1990s. And everybody around me was going down like flies because that was not a popular career choice, shall we say. So I needed to find something that I had a knack for, that I was good at. And I'd always loved math. I was in pre-med in college. And so I read every book I could get my hands on trading and investing, and I realized it's all math. Mm-hmm. If you really understand how to do it correctly. And then the crash of 87 had destroyed the retirement nest eggs of a bunch of family and friends. So I stepped in. I said, I think I can help you rebuild your portfolio mathematically. And then within a few years, people were getting in touch with me and asking for help. One guy said, will you consult for me? I looked around and said, what? I'm a consultant? I had no idea. Wow. Okay, I guess I'm a consultant. So here we go. We're off to the races in a whole new career. And that was 30 years ago. And that's what I've done ever since, yeah. Along the way, I learned currency trading because foreign exchange is a lot of fun. And I became affiliated with a firm in Vancouver. We developed software for the trading the currency market.
So. Forex is a it can be a real winner, and it can also be a real good way to go broke.
Yeah, 95%. I teach a very particular trading method. I'm not active teaching anymore, but 95% of probably north of that, of people who get into Forex lose money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Unless, I mean, if you get the market right, though, it can be astoundingly beneficial.
That sounds like worse odds than the casino.
Well, you have to get yourself right. Mm-hmm. People defeat themselves. Even if you give someone a rock-solid trading method with excellent rules, strict money management, they'll still screw it up because they're trading against themselves. It's very difficult for most people to completely remove emotion from the trading process. And you have to. You have to become a Borg trade. Yeah.
In any type of investing or speculation, you've got to divorce yourself from that.
Yeah.
Like this is, make it monopoly money. Right? It doesn't exist. It's something that I threw away. And you have to really, really put a lot of effort into doing that and training yourself not to freak out. I mean, it's really difficult to do. I mean, I've tried a few times and it's, you know, I mean, I've had some decent wins doing so, but it's hard on the psyche. It is.
My students, you know, the Forex is about $6 trillion a day in volume. I said, think of it as a 6 trillion gallon tank of water. And you're out there bobbing in the dark all alone. Nobody knows you're there. Nobody cares. You can go under. Nobody will notice.
Jim.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an accelerated commodity type of a market.
Well, the point, I guess I'm not making my point very well. There used to be these ads on TV for Forex Made Easy software. You pay $5,000 and go to a hotel seminar. There's more flowers on stage in a funeral home. And, you know, Tony, whatever his name is up there introducing the speaker. Everybody's all pumped up. And then Monday morning, you fly back to West Oshkosh. You're all alone in your hotel room. It's raining out. I mean, your home office. All just you and this 6 trillion gallon tank of currency. Good luck, because there's nobody there to give you an attaboy, nobody to congratulate you, nobody to console you. And that's when the devils all come out. I've always said the best form of self-help counseling is to trade. Mm-hmm. You'll learn more about yourself in the first 6 months than all the sessions you could go to for the next 10 years. And once you get that under control, then you have a really good chance of actually being profitable.
So is Forex trading a big part of your kind of consulting service?
No. No, I don't even bring it up anymore unless someone asks me. If they know I have a reputation and history for teaching, I'll talk to them and possibly take them under my wing, but that's not something that I actively do. My consulting, 99% of it is risk management. It's hardcore financial risk management for families to prepare them for what's coming, which is going to be a doozy.
Oh, yeah.
What is coming? Is it going to be worse than 2008?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be worse than, it's going to be worse than 1920s. Yeah, it's going to make the 1920s look friendly.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
should I start investing in like guns and ammo and stuff like that?
Well,
hard supplies? Food?
I don't
put food in the bunker.
See, I can't give you financial advice, don't you know, because I'm not licensed. But let me just say, it would be very wise to be prepared situationally. Yes, situationally, which has to do with where do I live? Am I in a high population density area? What do I do when all the neighbors find out that I have a basement full of food because I couldn't keep my mouth shut? There's so much.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about it on a podcast like an idiot.
Yeah, you. Yeah. They don't need to know. Benjamin Franklin said three can keep a secret if two are dead.
That's true.
Yeah. And the broader that gets, the worse it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, yeah, we're coming into the quote, perfect storm of many different cycles converging at the same time.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be one for the history books.
And any estimate on how much time I have so I can move from where I'm at?
Well, are you familiar with Martin Armstrong?
Either I am not.
Well, the greatest recommendation I could make to the two of you is go to armstrongeconomics.com and sign up for his free blog. Basically, you get a bunch of emails in your inbox every day, but they're the same post that he puts on his blog.
Okay.
Then he has a $15 a month membership. He's the world's number one financial consultant that nobody knows about. He consults with all the major corporations, all the world's governments. He has a computer program that he wrote 40 years ago. I know this sounds unbelievable, but it has forecasts sometimes to the day and years in advance. Unbelievably, market shaking events like the collapse of Russia, like the crash of 87. And there's a movie called The Forecaster, which you can look up. I think you'd have to pay for it. You go to theforecaster.com or whatever it is. You'll never see it on Netflix or Amazon. It was banned in the U.S., played all over the world. It's basically the story of how the CIA went to him for his source code, for his program, which he calls Socrates. He basically developed the world's first artificial intelligence computer, paid millions of dollars to have a whole team of researchers feed every bit of data he could find going back 5,000 years on any subject you can think of. And the computer generates reports by looking at minutiae, things that a human could never see them. And one of the things that he learned along the way is that every world-shaking event, like 9-1-1, for example, the people who perpetrate it move their money in advance of the event, to either get it out of harm's way and or to profit from what's coming. And the computer sees that.
Yeah, there's actually someone that I do follow, a gentleman named James Corbett. Actually just did his book titled Reportage actually calls out that exact thing, the 9-1-1 bets. Yeah. And there
the puts.
Yep, it's right there in plain. I mean, sure. It's just sitting right there. Quite interesting premonitions, if you will.
Well, see, Martin Armstrong, was brought in by the SEC after 9-1-1. They wanted to use his software to help figure out who bought the puts. Mm. That's the level this guy operates at. But the reason I brought it up, you asked me what the time frame was. He's projecting that the bottom of this whole mess is going to be 2032.
Yep. Yep. There's been a number of people that are saying 2032 is going to be kind of that gate.
Yeah.
Whether it's the opening of the gate or that's the bottom of it, I'm not positive. Hard to say.
Well, when I do risk consulting, I break it down. There's political risk, geopolitical risk, dollar risk, market risk, asset risk, situational risk. And then there's also, the psychological and emotional and, of course, spiritual component. And you got to get all of those lined up. And I've been teaching this for years, and there isn't a lot of time left. But I've got a bunch of buddies. We get together a couple of nights a week on Zoom and share information with each other. And my little happy little tribe is pretty prepared, including with my kids. Yeah. The three kids, I have three children. We all live together.
Good.
Right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Really, well, one's 20, one's 24, and one's 26. And I'll be 80 in November. So it's just a little different.
It's a great way of living, to be honest with you. It harkens back to the way we were.
That's right.
Pre-1940s, right?
That's right.
If you look at the way societies and families were run, there were larger families and they lived in the same house or potentially built houses on the property for the children. But the family unit kind of stuck together, right?
Oh, and, totally, and there 100%. Was
a lot more resiliency in that because the families were also, you know, especially through the Depression, but even prior to that, right? There was a real need to have at least some food production, the ability to maintain things, stitch clothes, cobble for shoes, you know, things of this nature, as well as, you know, equipment maintenance, woodwork, steel work, et cetera.
Sure. If you were 80 years, I mean, you were born at home, you died at home. Mm-hmm. If you were 80 years old, you shucked peas and corn along with the four-year-olds. You always did something productive until the last days of your life. Everybody worked together as a team. And then when your kids would get married, you'd carve off a piece of land just over the hill where you couldn't see each other, a little bit of privacy, and they'd have their property. And then in those days, the first year, maybe you'd clean up the big rocks, pull the big rocks out and build the stone walls, you'd uproot the trees. The following year, you might dig a cellar hole in between planting and harvesting. Maybe by two or three years later, you'd framed a place that you could live in. And then the Rockefellers came along. Mm. In the early 1900s, the zoning laws were passed such that you had to go from groundbreaking to occupancy within 1 to 2 years and drove everybody into the arms of the bankers. It's one of the many schemes that got foisted on us.
So,
like it's a conspiracy.
Yeah. Where's my hat? My tinfoil is here somewhere.
Yeah, we all have one.
Yeah. So, I'm in different colors for different occasions. I just...
Do you?
I'm prepared. It's risk preparation.
How do you get them to hold the color? Because I've tried like dry erase markers and paint and it just chips right off the foil.
Yeah, just spray paint, yeah. Go the cheap route.
There you go.
Even talking about the stuff happening before 9/11, the different players in motion, that would tend to make people think that it was a conspiracy as well, almost like everything's planned to happen.
If there were no conspiracy, we would have no history.
Mm. There's a lot of truth to that.
Powerful people with dynastic wealth get together in private and make arrangements for their own benefit and self-interest. We all do that. It's human nature. They're just operating at a different sphere, one of invisibility above elected politics, because they all know each other and they have the wherewithal to do whatever they want, because they can buy anything they want, including entire governments, entire legislatures. Now, to call it a conspiracy is to diminish what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're just making plans. They're making plans for the future that they want for, quote, their planet.
Yeah, I think it was.
Now, when you say it, it sounds logical. When I say it, people look at me like I'm crazy. Maybe I just don't say it well enough, I guess.
But no one said you're not. I'm just.
That's true.
We'll keep all our options open.
I think it was Robert Higgs who said, what was it? It was whatever you believe they are doing, it's far worse.
It is.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And they've already been doing it for longer than you were aware they're doing it.
Oh, yeah. Well, they project, right? I mean, it's all projected out there. It's just for some reason never covered or talked about. But, you know, people are looking. Is that me?
Is your smoke alarm going off?
Is that me? I don't think so.
It's not me.
My son's here. Was that us?
Not me.
Okay. So his son just came out of his office and shook his head no.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Might be
my
wife.
It was the NSA. We must have said the magic word. Remember the old Groucho Marx show? You bet your life. We must have just said the magic word. The bird came down with $100, remember?
Yep. Yeah. So So the thing, the interesting thing is I actually had this discussion with someone today, and you know, if you remember back in the day, Eisenhower actually warned about the, you know, technocratic elite.
Sure.
Right. Which is a striking weirdness, because he was one of the people that ushered in the, you know, military.
That's what I was going to say. Wasn't he part of it too?
Complex, right? So it's one of those things, though, you'll hear it said 40 years before you actually see it in practice.
Well, if you follow Catherine Austin Fitz, mm-hmm. she made the point, she knows where all the financial bodies are buried in Washington. She made the point that starting in the early 1990s is when the ultra elite made the decision to form what she calls the breakaway civilization and to start stealing the money, funneling it out the back door into their black private projects. And 9-1-1, which was simultaneously a gold heist, a bond fraud, and an insurance scam, was critical to moving that forward. So we had the banking regulations and the Patriot Act. And this is all very complex. These are many, these conspiracies, we'll call them, have many, many, many moving parts. And they're planned years in advance, painstakingly planned years in advance and executed. But they make a lot of mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
They made a lot of mistakes on 9-1-1. Technology helps us look back now and spot some of those mistakes. But it's pretty easy to figure out the who, what, where, when, and how, and why. All the things you would ask in a criminal investigation. That's been solved. 9-1-1's been solved, right down to who did it. And with that, and a dollar would get you a cup of coffee. Well, actually more like $5 these days.
Right.
Because it's great to be informed so we can go to parties and outsmart each other. Like the guy who's, I know more about the 9-1-1 than you do. You know, like it's somehow stock and trade to be the most informed person in the block. But the question is, what are they going to do next? And how do we prepare ourselves to not just survive, but thrive through what they're going to do next? That's my mission when I work with clients.
Yeah. I'd say agorism, you know, an agorist life, right? Is really what it comes down to is, you know, you cannot win against the system. You cannot beat them. They have ungodly amount of resources to make sure that is not a possibility, right? And they call it a level playing field. It's not. It never will. It was, and it never will be. However, what you can do is exit. There's nothing stopping you or preventing you from exiting. It's just you have to be logical about how you exit, which is one of the reasons I live on a farm, raise livestock, grow food, have, you know, perennials and fruit trees and berry plants and
good for you, know, that's great.
All that good stuff, because of the fact that one of the key things for survival is going to be your food, right? I would list that as priority number one, defense being priority number two, right?
No, I agree. I've been arguing, helping my friends. The time is to do what you just said is absolutely now. You have to do it in any way that you can, even if it means joining an intentional community.
Yeah, I would say
it's already out there.
It was probably 6 years ago. Let me be frank for anyone watching this, right? If you think you are going to wait until a situation occurs and then just go put some seeds in the ground and find some chickens and life is going to be happy-go-lucky and you're going to be okay, you are wrong, and you will suffer the consequences. It takes years, if not longer, to effectively learn how to manage, mm-hmm. preserve, and produce foodstuffs for yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you aren't doing it right this moment, you are way behind, in my opinion.
What if I just know somebody that has all those things and has a spare bedroom?
I've already told you, all you got to do is get here. that becomes the problem, though. That's a long trip from where you are to where I am.
Well, so, if worse comes to worse, you buy. I sold it a couple of years ago, but I had a 1993 30-foot diesel, Class C diesel RV. Got solar panels on the top, batteries. You can boondock. You can go anywhere. You can follow the sun. You can go pick blueberries, pick strawberries, work as a farmhand. If there's a storm coming, drive away. And that might be a last resort plan C for people who don't have the means to buy enough property to grow their own food on. And maybe plan B would be to join a cooperative or an intentional community where like-minded people have already gotten started, and all you have to do is buy into their, like, a share of what they've created, you know. But I agree with you, have it completely. It's food, clothing, and shelter. Haslow's hierarchy of needs. You gotta eat.
Yep.
And then you gotta not be homeless.
Yeah.
And then you've got to be able to defend yourself against people who want to take what you own.
And they will. And yep. That's another thing. Being further away from populated areas is going to be essential. Because I don't care how badass you think you are, or how much of a whatever you've got set up, defensive BS. Look, if you're in a suburban or more populated area, you will be overrun by thousands of people. Yeah. It's not going to be like 10 people or 4 people. It's going to be a throng, and you have no hope. There is none, right? So, wow.
No, doom and gloom. Agree.
Here's the positive thing, though. You can make a difference. You can change things. You can change things, at least for you and your family and your community.
Yes.
And the way to do that is to exit and build. Right. And literally those intentional communities may be something that you should look into. Right. There are some wonderful people that have started some all over the United States and Mexico, in Europe. There are, you know, South America, Central America. There are a ton of them. Right. And they are looking for people that are like-minded and want to make a change.
Yep. No, I agree.
You just got to make sure you don't accidentally join a cult, because I know there's a fine line in there.
Well,
that's funny. I've been telling my friends for years, nobody on a white horse is going to come save you. You can't change what's going on in the swamp. There's nothing you can do at the macro level to change the collapse of empire. There's nothing you can do. But you can be very strong here. And then you can be strong for your children, your family, your friends, your fellow churchgoers, your neighbors, whatever the tribe is that you consider to your tribe. Now, if you want to get on a soapbox and try to have a larger voice, run for local politics, whatever, that's great. But you've got to start at home and be ready and resilient and ready for what's coming. And you can't do it around other people.
Yeah.
Because as one writer said, anarchy is just 9 meals away.
Pretty much, right? And I'd like to also point out, there's a common misconception, right? I mean, societally, we've been trained to think that, you know, whenever you hear the word anarchy, that is, you know, destruction and maiming and just craziness. And really, that's, you were born an anarchist.
Yeah.
You were. There was no, you know, there's no ruler over you. You're just.
I was using the term as people commonly consume it to be. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. I that's one of those things I'm kind of like, you know, I want society to start to understand that that actual term has been, you know, kind of captured to equate to bad things. And you know, what it essentially stands for, it's you know, two different words, an and archy, right? One is without, and the other is rulers. That's literally what anarchy means. That's it. So you can assign it burning cars and trashing homes and all this stuff that if you want to, but it's like saying that a pool is actually a good term to use for the sky. It doesn't equate. It's definitionally incorrect.
A friend of mine joked. He said the worst possible form of government would be a gynarchy.
Mm-hmm.
It's governed by 100% by women. I'm only kidding, ladies. I was only kidding. Just having a little fun.
I mean,
don't know. Let's change it. Yeah. Save yourself, Havoc. Don't go there.
My wife. No.
Our job is to figure them out. No, go ahead.
Right, right. So one of the other areas you focus on that you said was constitutional taxation. What does that mean exactly?
Well, all the money powers that the federal government is authorized to perform are in the Constitution. Most people have never read it. Literally never read it. I mean, never actually read it. You can read it in 20 minutes at the average adult reading speed. Okay, you can go to the National Archives and worship it behind bulletproof glass and a very serious armed Marine, walk by and gape at it as if it were the Mona Lisa. But most people have never read it. When you read it, you discover that there are two types of taxes authorized to be collected under the Constitution, which are direct taxes and indirect taxes. You're also taught in school that the 16th Amendment amended the Constitution to allow for the collection of an income tax, and then the red herring, although true, is that it was never lawfully ratified, which is a moot point because it did not amend the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
It was a psychological operation to worm in the 1916 income tax, 13 income tax, along with the Federal Reserve and the passage of the 16th Amendment within the same 9 months in the same year as a match set.
Yep.
Because you have to have a confiscatory income tax to stabilize the purchasing power of fiat money.
Well, if you're going to base your economy on debt and the ability to create money out of thin air, mm-hmm. where it never existed, you've got to backfill that with something, right?
Yeah.
And that's essentially what that is, you know, they took liberties, I will say, with the way things were stated to us that made it seem that at the end of the day, well, they did. They try.
No. They You're try. Breaking my heart here. Come on. Where's the Kleenex?
Right. They made it seem like this was, you know, part of their authority. But there's a Supreme Court case that actually came in. I think it was not too long after that, 10, 12 years after that. And the judgment in the case was that the 16th Amendment conferred no new taxation authority.
No new power of taxation were the exact words.
Oh, okay. It was. Yeah.
But let's talk about it. Why is that true? Why is that true? How was the 16th Amendment a PSYOP? I'm not trying to quiz you. I'm asking it rhetorically. I mean, I can go there if you want. I don't know if you want.
Yeah, go there.
You want the weekend lecture or the 5 minute?
No, let's go with the weekend lecture. That's the best part. Well, let's get into it.
Well, direct taxes are apportioned among the states. There's no authority in the Constitution to directly tax the individual, tax a citizen. So in the era of the founders, the idea of the federal government having any debt that carried over from year to year was just unacceptable and unheard of. And debts might be accumulated to pursue or prosecute a war, and then you'd pay them off as quickly as you could. So the way I like to joke about it, just suppose right today that Trump decided to invade Canada, and Congress passes the Let's Invade Canada Act, and it's going to cost $435 billion. Well, it just so happens there's 435 representatives in the House of Representatives. New Hampshire has two. I don't have the exact count in California, but it's in the 30s or 50s. Texas is like 30, right? It's uniform throughout the state. That's why there's a census every 10 years. So New Hampshire would owe 2/435 of that apportionment, which would come from the State Department, to the legislature of the state of New Hampshire, demanding that payment, or they send in federal troops, like Washington and Hamilton did over the Whiskey Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So now I get a letter in the mail from the State Department of Revenue saying, Mr. Phillips, you and your family each owe your, let me back up a little bit. Now New Hampshire's got to figure out how they're going to raise their $2 billion, which is $2,400, right? Well, they're going to apportion that somehow under the state's constitution and try to collect it from the good people of New Hampshire. And I get a letter in the mailbox that says, have your check payable to the State Department of Revenue by next Tuesday. And everyone's out in the street with pitchforks and actually today with TV remotes and cell phones. I guess we've gone past torches and pitchforks. And now there's this massive riotous blowback to Congress of massive protest. We're not going to pay it. Congress said, ooh, that wasn't a good idea. We better rescind that bill. So it was a measure. It was a deliberate, very, very difficult to move through legislative process to get one of these direct taxes apportioned. We've only had five in America's history, and they were all in the late 1800s. They could vote tomorrow morning to apportion a direct tax to all the states and pay off the entire federal debt if they wanted to. So. Well, indirect taxes. I mean,
other than the fact,
theoretically,
that there's nothing of that tier of value unless you sold everything and everyone.
Right. Yeah. Or they're working on it. Yeah.
All of your corporate assets.
Yes. Yes, Irwin. I agree. So now getting into the income tax. The income tax has unique, I should say, indirect taxes have unique properties. For one thing, they're uniform throughout the states. They're excises, intended originally on imposts, imports, and duties. And they're avoidable because you don't have to participate in the activity that's taxed. Putting a stamp on a letter, it's an excise tax. Use the internet, you're paying the Al Gore internet tax, right? You pump gasoline, regardless of the price at the pump, there's a core amount embedded within that price that takes care of the motor vehicle fuel excise tax. And so when you get into the 16th Amendment, it said Congress, the income can be basically from whatever source derived without apportionment, enumeration or apportionment among the states. Well, indirect taxes were never subject to the rule of apportionment, ever. And what happened was, if you read the Supreme Court decisions, it's almost like they're mocking Congress. Like, you got to be crazy. There's no new power of taxation here. But it created the authority in the minds of the people that something new and hitherto unknown, like this new somehow bastard hybrid tax that was somewhere in between direct and indirect, had been foisted on the people. But what had happened prior to that in the early 1900s is all the big moguls and financiers and all the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers and all these folks had, this is prior to radio. The medium of the day was the newspaper. Yep. So they bought up controlling interests in about 25 of the top newspapers, mostly along the Eastern Seaboard. And for several years, it said the income tax is coming, but you won't pay it. It's 1% tax, and we're going to soak the rich, which really sold well in Main Street.
Which is weird. It's almost like history has repeated itself.
Well, it rhymes. Doesn't repeat, it rhymes, right?
It does rhyme.
And so what the wealthy had already done is they had sheltered all of their assets in complex trusts. Then they buy up the newspapers and tell the people the income tax is coming. Then they buy up Congress, and they make sure that the Income Tax Act, the Federal Reserve Act, and the 16th Amendment, again, are all passed as a package deal. And they guarantee the transfer of wealth from the first producers of money, who get it for nothing, to the end users who pay through the nose their whole life as it literally melts away like an ice cube in the palm of their hand. It's lost 97% of its purchasing power.
Well, I mean, when you've got inflation built in as a mode of economic condition, then you are debasing your own currency over time. There's sure. No other way to look at that.
Well, if you want to have some fun, I use this as a teaching example. is used cars towards the end of their life depreciated about 12% per year. Okay. And the Federal Reserve note, and we'll call it the dollar, has been losing purchasing power of a true inflation of about 6% per year for the last 25 years. So if you're holding your life savings in a 401k or IRA, it's losing value only half as fast as a used car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give you something. What? That was, that's, said a friend of mine, that was, that's what it took to wake you up, huh? Now you get it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just look at it and you see a lot of it now today with younger generations being upset at the, you know, older generations for their, you know, better conditions and, you know, easier money and blah, 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 blah. Right. Mm-hmm. And one thing that they seem to always focus in on, and one can make their own speculation as to why this is, but, you know, they always focus in on this older generation. Like, you had this and you squandered it. You allowed this to happen.
Well, it's your fault personally. I looked it up.
Right.
Okay, boomer.
Exactly. But what actually, if you were to look at it from the standpoint of the people that they're blaming now and go back, you know, 6 years from that, you'd see the same thing, right? Sure. And it's just the way the system is set up. If you want to be mad at someone, be mad at the system. Be mad at the fact that this is the way the system is designed. Be mad at 1913. Where we essentially sold our entire, and yeah, this isn't even true statement, but I'm going to say it anyway, even though I know 100% this isn't truth. But at that point, we effectively sold our entire economy over to a group of bankers.
That's
essentially
true. No, it's true. It's not an overstatement.
Yeah,
it was a multi-generational. I want to say dynastic. Go ahead.
Well, I the only thing I want to say about that is that was occurring far before that, right? It just wasn't written into law at that point, right? So it was occurring, it was happening, but at a far slower pace, which is where you saw these long-term areas where people think people had it so good. But remember, these same people had to grow food in their garden because food was not something you could count on having.
Right, there was no Walmart.
Yeah, no, there was not. So the history of it becomes something, if you really care to look into it, it wasn't the generation like my father that created this mess, right? Although arguably, you know, a portion of them had a hand to play in it, and we all do to some extent, right? Unless you're sitting there going, nope, I'm not going to be a party to this. I'm not going to participate in it, and I'm going to get out of it, and that's on you.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. This has been a deliberate, engineered takeover of the rebel colonies that the city of London was not able to capture at the end of the 1700s. They came back in 1812, weren't successful, and then try to divide the North and the South by funding both sides of the war between the states. And then they fomented the great crash, many crashes throughout the 1800s, many depressions, all the way through World War I, World War II, the whole expansion of empire. And then today we see Trump sitting down with this joker, who's called the King of England. I wouldn't pay this guy to empty my septic tank in a room that's trimmed with gold leaf. And we're right back where we started. Caligula hosts Chuck.
Absolutely.
That's my take on the meeting in Washington. Caligula and Chuck get together, shake hands. Their wives are looking all pretty and dolled up in $5,000 Gucci dresses. The average person out there can't afford to eat at Shoney's anymore, is skipping meals to feed their kid and even feed their dog. Yeah. And this is going to go down like a dumpster fire. It's going to get very bad. And yeah. I'm a very optimistic, fun-loving guy. My friend of mine said you could have been a stand-up comic in another life. I enjoy tossing babies into the air as much as any guy does, to the horror of their wives, of their mothers. But I'm a realist, hard nose, and it's coming, and it's going to be bad, very bad.
Yeah,
I do say.
And you,
I might be jumping ahead too much, like just flipping to the back of the book. But what is the end game for these people?
Well, it's ultimate control. It's to turn the world into a digital prison camp with ultimate control over food, water, travel, communication, reproduction. They're heavily engaged in a depopulation campaign. They've been poisoning the people for 50, 60 years. All they're doing is speeding things up. And having a 100% programmable currency, if the people allow it, and I think they will, the 95% of the public has never resisted tyranny throughout human history. That's not a condemnation of our fellow man. It's just the truth. They're either growing food, they're hard at work, they don't have a minute to think for themselves. They wake up at the very last minute when things are so bad, they have no choice but to go out to the street. And by then, they're already trapped.
Late cage doors are closed.
I'm pretty sure I've read that book. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that four-digit book. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It wasn't supposed to be a manual, but, you know, hey.
Yeah, Animal Farm.
Right? Yeah. I like the closing message, right? Imagine a boot stamping on a human face.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're heading in that direction. They're very good at it. Are you familiar with The Great Taking by David Webb?
I am not, actually.
Boy, that's another one. Write that one down. You can go to thegreattaking.com and you can watch the documentary for free, or you can read his book for free. Former hedge fund manager, he did research into how the Uniform Commercial Code, starting in the 90s, once again, was modified in all 50 states to allow for the taking of equity, anything encumbered with debt in a banking crisis. You no longer have traditional, historic, common law, constitutional title to your property. It's one of the most important things you can do. I'm telling you, is watch that video, The Great Taking. And he and other people are traveling the country, speaking with legislators in all the states, trying to get them to wake up and take action, and being met with tremendous resistance, all financed by the banking lobby.
Yeah, that's one area for me that's always been, not always, but, you know, at least for quite some time now. You know, the idea that you could get the people that are benefiting from the current system to vote that power and money away from themselves seems to me like a pipe dream. It's a fairy tale. And I've never really truly understood why people actually believe that, right? I mean, why would you believe that voting, no matter who you get in there, is going to cause these people to say, oh, no, you're right, we have too much power, we're going to give some up. And you're right, we're making way too much money, we're going to give that up too. And, you know, we don't need all this pomp and circumstance, we're going to give that up too. It's ridiculous.
Back up 100 yards and ask, who has the power to vote in the first place?
Well, you know,
40% of the public is illiterate. They can't do basic math out of a calculator. They've never read the Constitution. You ask these teenagers, they think we separated from Canada in 1776. And if they can fog a mirror, they have the right to go in and select people who can write laws and put on paper words that make us do what they command us to do. Otherwise, we suffer fees and penalties. And they call it legislation.
Yeah.
And half of them are a bunch of free. It looks like a bar scene from Star Wars in Congress.
Oh, yeah. The most.
Literally.
What is it?
And we're going to ask these people state by state to go against how their bread is buttered.
Not a chance.
The whole thing is just, you have to, like George Carlin, he said, we have a front row seat to the collapse in America. In America, you got a front row seat.
It's a
get your popcorn
club,
ready. Buy some agricultural futures. Get your popcorn ready.
It's a big club, and brother, you ain't in it.
Yeah, the And the club they hit you all over the head with every day. You know?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes is from a guy, and this gentleman, as well as another gentleman in about a century prior in France, have been very influential to me. But one of my favorite quotes is, "But whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such government as we have had or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist." And that's Lysander Spooner. "No treason, the Constitution of no authority."
Yes. Thank you. Boy, am I glad. I'm happy. You just made my week. I can't believe someone else knows that. Like, wow, it's kind of validating. So thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing about this is, you know, people think, you know, oh, the government's gotten so bad. What you have to understand is this gentleman started a letter company, the American Letter Mail Company.
That's right.
And it was cheaper, more efficient, faster than the postal service was.
Yeah.
The government took him to task because they hate competition.
Sure, of course.
I mean, at the end of the day, right? And I would urge anyone to pick up that. It's a very, very small book, but it will open your eyes to things happening in the 1800s that you think may have started in the 70s, 80s. It did not.
No, I remember reading him saying, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, he said, "Why do I agree to this Constitution? I didn't sign it."
Yeah.
I remember the day I read that, my brain froze. It's one of those out-of-body moments where you realize something just changed in your world, right? He says, I was born into this. I didn't agree to this. Yep. Why do I consent to this? Wow. Yeah, so my joke has always been a Republican is a Democrat who got mugged. Okay. And then a libertarian is a Republican who got mugged. Then a constitutionalist is a libertarian who got mugged. And then if you mug a libertarian, you go all the way around until you bump into Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, gosh.
But on the way, you pass Lysander.
Yep.
Because he's got the truth right there. He had it absolutely nailed. He totally got it completely. He was hundreds of years ahead of his time.
Well, yeah, and then, but you can go back before that about a century and you look at Friedrich Bastiat. Right.
Yes, if you have the law. Yep. I homeschooled all three of my kids. They listened to that before we called them podcasts.
Yep.
They listened to that on replay. I didn't record it, but I know someone who did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Amen. And then it's Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt.
Yep.
All essential, hardcore homeschool. How to turn your kids into little rebels. No, I'm only kidding. That's not what I did.
Well, you know, how to inform them and how to have them gain a better understanding of the system.
Yes. Yes.
And its underpinnings.
Yes. What my goal was kind of based on the Kenny Rogers song, The Gambler. You got to teach him, you know, he needs to know when to hold them, when to fold them, and when to walk away. And you got to be smart enough to get along in society, be smart enough to know when to act dumb enough to get along. And don't ever, ever be elite. Don't judge other people. Don't put people down because you know more than they do, because you're fortunate that you're better educated. I say the same for myself. I was dumb as a stump till I was 40 when I learned all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But I taught my kid, we'd hold up a penny. There's Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator, who freed the slaves and saved the Union, don't you know? And then we turn the penny over, and it's all dark and dirty and corroded. And there's the great tyrant who had members of the Maryland State Legislature arrested so they couldn't secede. He would have had the Southern Army on the other side of the Potomac. Yep. The things he did could have been attributed to Saddam Hussein. And I taught my kids both sides of the story. I said, now one side is the only side your friends in public school know. You need to know the truth. Just remember, you're going to want to use discretion as to when you reveal what you know. You don't want to be a smarty pants. You want to maintain your humility. But it's my job as your father. I can't let you get out of the nest as a dummy. You got to know the truth. And that's a balance. It was tricky striking that balance with three extremely smart kids. I think I succeeded. They're all very wonderful young people. They're all doing really well.
Yeah, I actually ended up in the principal's office in high school.
I'm shocked. I'm really, I'm just curious. Yeah, well,
on this occasion, it was because I turned in a report that was asked to be done, which was, you know, do a report on George Washington, right? And they're expecting, you know, here's your school material. You're going to use that and you're going to write a report and it's going to be rosy and colorful and wonderful about this gentleman. And I actually went to the UCI, University of California, Irvine Library, because that's where I was at the time, and did my studying there. And what I came back with was a picture of a gentleman who was morally bankrupt at best, and really kind of hit home on those aspects of the man. And I got a trip to the principal's office for that because it was cited, it was sourced from college level material. Yeah, so
sure.
it was not inaccurate or not factual. It just wasn't speaking to the narrative that they wanted me to, you know, portray.
And you read what Thomas Paine, his letters to Washington once Washington was in the White House.
Yep.
He condemned him for acting like a king, riding around in a carriage with plumes on it, pulled by white horses.
Yep. Specifically white horses. To be white, white.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Things you never get to hear.
No. And then the farmers in Western Pennsylvania who used whiskey as actual barter currency. So the Hamilton, who was the banker's boy, kept popping in and out of the Constitutional Convention with his orders from abroad. Had Washington, who was kind of, you know, a little off the beam there in his senior years, entrusted Hamilton, and they went riding in with a whole, I don't know how many troops, to put down the rebellion, to show this new government that the anti-federalists feared would become another king, did exactly what they thought was going to happen.
Yep.
And that was the beginning. As a friend of mine once remarked, and I agree, the high water mark of this republic was 1860. The first damage it received was the Whiskey Rebellion, and then we had the Alien and Sedition Act, was the Patriot Act of their day. And then we come up to Lincoln's War, or to be more polite, the War of Southern Independence. The War of Northern Aggression is what's true Southerners call it, and properly so.
That's what I was going to say, but...
Yeah. And then we march, and then the empire gets started in the early 1900s, and here we are today with military bases in 200 countries, and Caligula in the White House. And then people say, where do you think it's going from here? I say, are you serious? Is that a serious question? I mean...
Listen, take a ball, roll it down a hill,
and
when it gets two-thirds of the way down the hill, tell me where it's going from there.
Right, there you go. That's good. Well said.
Down the hill, faster.
Yeah. Down the hill, it's much faster, actually. Yeah. And if it's a snowball, much bigger.
True. Absolutely. I love the use of Caligula, too, because that's something that I've said a number of times. I also like the term Mango Mussolini, but, you know, hey.
Yeah, that's good. I like that, too. I hope Mr. Trump doesn't face the same fate that Mr. Mussolini did. Wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No, I would call myself a pacifist, right? Except in the course of defense. Mm-hmm. Outside of defense, I don't see violence as being a viable option in any way, shape, or form at any time.
Right? I totally agree.
There are better ways to handle things.
I totally agree. The only real purpose of government is the forgive me for using the word collective or the unified expression of the individual right of self-defense. That's it.
Yeah. And anymore, it's really just a monopoly on violence.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. I mean, there are literally zero, zero laws or legislative instances that aren't enforced with the eventual threat of death. Comply, well, yeah, or maybe shoot
just
you.
These fines and they bankrupt you. Then if they can't do that, then they shoot you.
Right. Right. Yeah. So interesting stuff. So when you talk about de-risking finance for people, what are some of the ways that you help people de-risk as far as finances go? And, mm-hmm. you know, from my eyes, I look at that and it's a tough one because especially most people are just, you know, fully tuned into fiat. And I don't know how you de-risk fiat.
Well, you do it with hard assets. So that's the most difficult part of what I do because it's literally cult deprogramming. We've been marinated in this mindset of the dollar for our whole lives. People accept, they think inflation is just a mild, like catching a cold. It's just this mild, you know. The dollar, here's the way I explain it. I love it because people remember visuals and they forget all the words. If your home shrank in size by 6% per year, within 3 to 5 years, you wouldn't be able to walk through the doorway. If your car shrank by that amount, within a few years, you couldn't even get behind the steering wheel. Most people, probably 99.9% of the American public, their entire lives are priced in dollars. They buy chewing gum in dollars. Their 401ks in dollars. They pay their internet bill in dollars. When their kid mows the lawn and gets a $20 bill, it's everything's dollars, dollars, dollars. They're inextricably linked to the dollar. And they're going to get what the dollar gets. And what the dollar gets is engineered erosion of purchasing power.
Yeah.
So just as an example, if somebody's, you know, pick an age, if somebody's 40 years old, and you ask Social Security, based on what I've contributed so far, actually it's been stolen from me, but we'll be polite and say contributed so far, what would my monthly check be if I cash this in at 62 and a half? And they say, oh, we're going to send you $2,000 a month. Well, what will that be worth? In 35 years from now? 25 years from now? Nobody knows it'll be worth 5 years from now. It's an absolute farce. So you pay in, if it's being withheld from a W-4 or whatever, it's being paid in at current purchasing power and paid back to you at seriously debased purchasing power. And so if you got 100,000, just to pick a modest number in your 401k right now, next year it'll buy 94,000 of what it'll buy this year, the following year 88 and 82, then down the drain you go. And once I can snap them out of their hypnosis and get them to understand what a crisis that is, they have to exit the system. Now you've got to keep a footprint in the system,
yeah,
to quack like a duck and look and function like a duck. Because you've got bills that come in next month and bills that come in the quarter after that. You have to have enough money in the system to be normal. The teller will smile when you show up. You don't look weird. If it's like being a flock of ducks flying overhead, you don't want to be the one whose, you know, beak is blinking red and you're flying upside down. You just want to blend in, be an ostensibly normal person. But the bulk of your net worth that's currently denominated in electrons, because that's all it is, it's just magnetized spots on bank hard drives and financial institution hard drives. You want to move that into hard assets that hold their value against eroding fiat. Now, you've got a choice of antiques. Oh, could be paintings, could be fine art, different types of collectibles, gems, semi-precious gems, land, raw land, developed land, and precious metals. And of all of those, because of accessibility, fungibility, access, ease of owning, storing, handling, precious metals are the go-to. Mm-hmm. Then to take it a step further, what class of precious metals? Because I do believe that when things get really bad, we're going to see severe capital controls on the ability to own precious metals.
Yeah. History which is says why that, I advocate, that will happen.
Yeah, which is why I advocate rare coins. Now, that's another whole educational hurdle for people to jump over. Because I can have a silver coin, silver dollar from 1880, let's say, that's so beat up you can't read the date on it. It doesn't really have much collectible value. And there's another one that looks so brand spanking new, Grandpa must have put it in a sock and stuck it under his toolbox and somebody just found it. And it's worth $30,000. So with rare coins, you get the underlying appreciation in spot, which still has much further to go. But you also get the rarity premium. And rare coins, numismatics, have never been confiscated by any Western government. Right, even Roosevelt's decree in 1933 exempted them.
Yeah, I was going to say, even the gold decree did not include, you know, gold coins, right? Now, gold rounds were included because that's not a coin, right? But gold coins were excluded from that. So
those that's the first thing I do. It's universal. Every client, you need to start right there. And I have a spreadsheet that I use that actually shows what percentage the client needs to move of their, I'll call it electronic money, into precious metals. And then that forms a new pie chart, and we break it down with gold, silver, platinum, rounds, pre-64, junk silver dimes, numismatics, and you know the correct way to stack. Then we get into the next big, huge metal burden to overcome is, oh my God, where am I going to keep all this? I say, well, bury it in the backyard. Yep. But actually bury it in your neighbor's backyard. Just don't tell your neighbor. And now we got the mindset in the right direction, and I explain, if you can't drop it on your foot, you don't own it.
Yeah.
And if you don't get that, go find someone else to work with, because I don't waver on these principles. And then if you want me to switch the subject, we can talk about other financial risk mitigation areas. But that's the first big major overlay, because it's sitting over their entire life.
Yeah.
One thing I did not hear you say, and we've had other people on the show talk about this quite a few times, Bitcoin. Noticed you did not mention that one time.
I am not anti-Bitcoin. I've thought from the very beginning that everybody should have a 1%, 2%, or 3% holding in Bitcoin or in crypto generally, and it's purely a speculative play.
Yep.
It's purely a speculative play. It has no inherent value. If the satellite dish goes down, if the power grid goes down, the internet goes down, it's worth exactly zero. There's no privacy. They can track it completely. They have from day one. And yes, there's Monero and all these other privacy coins, and they can track those too. The NSA has quantum computing abilities way beyond what the public's been told. They can crack anything they want to if they choose to put you under the crosshairs.
One of the key benefits when it does come to something like Bitcoin, though, is that it is highly capable of transactional stuff, right? Whereas like a precious metal is far less capable of.
No, that. I agree. There's no reason not to have a little bit of the action on an app on your phone. If you want to go beep, beep, and I just paid you $5, like Venmo, except we're using Bitcoin or some other type of crypto. No problem. But as far as taking your entire life savings, which some people do, and putting it in, you know, into Ethereum or Bitcoin or whatever, I think that would be a very risky gamble.
It could be. And it would also depend, right? I mean, you could also point to people that, you know, you could point to people that bought in at 120K and they're at a massive loss. But you can also point to people that bought in early in the early days and they are nowhere near a massive loss.
I agree. So I agree. If you're gonna have a well balanced, diversified portfolio, you make a decision what asset classes you're gonna hold and then how you're going to enter each of those classes. If you're entering a very volatile asset class, you can cost average in and play the game, but you have to have an exit strategy too. If you're just gonna buy and hold and hope for the best, well, that's just roughly a raw gamble. If you're in the stock market and you know anything about technical analysis and how to read charts and candlesticks on the weekly and monthly chart on the Dow or the S&P 500, it shows you when to exit, when to get off the dance floor. If you got a 401k, just move it into money markets. I mean, there are risk mitigation protocols for every asset class. if you want to take a flyer on Bitcoin and just not have any extra strategy and worry about it, because it could go to $1 million a coin. Nobody knows. Have some fun, but just do it with a very prudent portion of your portfolio.
Yeah, I always say just money you don't need. You don't have to think about.
Right.
Right. Outside of that, you know, hey, it's up to you, right? It's your life. But yeah. You know, throw a little here, a little there if you feel like, you know, doing that. I personally enjoy it. I enjoy some of the freedom that it brings about.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, look, if the electricity stops, it's gone.
Yeah. If the electricity goes to stop, the money in your bank account up the street's gone too.
Oh, it is. Yep.
So one of the first things you do.
My life savings.
What's that?
I was just going to say, we're going to take my life savings. I'm going to buy Pokemon cards.
what?
There's a market for that.
There's a market for that, yeah. One of the first things that I have clients do is make sure you've got at least 6 months worth of cash.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking 20s.
At home.
At home.
Or somewhere. Yeah, somewhere you can get to.
Somewhere where you and maybe one other human knows where it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, even in the worst case scenario, at least for a period of time, that will be fungible.
That's right.
Now, that could change after, you know, couple of months, few months or so, but at least for a period of time, you would have, you know, fungible assets.
And if we had a Venezuela-type economic experience in the U.S., which I don't see happening, because all the games they're going to play with digital money, I think, would preclude that. But that's also an argument for pre-64 silver dimes as a barter, as just plain barter.
Yeah, 90% silver.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and you can get that fairly cheap too, depending.
Yep. You know, I work with, well, they're just friends of mine. I'm not employed by them, but is our Rare Coins of New Hampshire. They're the best. They're just, what a gem they are. Nobody even knows about them. RCNH.com, Rare Coins of New Hampshire. Really good, solid people, patriots, fellow travelers. They know the deal. They know where the bodies are buried. They have a lot of very wealthy clients who like to remain private. They'll come to them with a big check and say, I'm putting a portfolio together for my daughter for her college graduation. Here's $1 million check. And if the folks at Rare Coins will say, well, we can fill half of that within 6 months, but the other half might take a couple years. What? They'll go to the big coin shows in New York and come back with nothing. Their standards are higher than that. Yeah, really, really good people.
That's a good one. I'll have to keep that in mind. Yeah, for sure.
Mention me only because you'll go to the top of their inbox because their phones are melting, literally, as you can imagine right now.
Oh, yeah.
People are waking up.
Some are.
Well, 5%, 3%. Human history.
Yep. You know, hey, it only takes a few percent to make a huge, huge
Margaret Mead.
Difference.
Margaret Mead.
Yep.
Yep. You're too smart. You're just too smart for your own good.
No, I was one of those people that was bought into the system, raised by a Navy captain. And, this was something that it took me quite a good number of years to unlearn. Right. And several iterations, right. I went from, you know, party affiliation to, well, this is no good. This, you know, this is obviously, this is wrong. To, you know, what was it at the time? Tea Party, right? To, well, yeah, nope, not that either. To mm-hmm. constitutionalists. Nope. Not that either. To where do I go from here? And eventually, exactly. And eventually ended up where I am now, which is I don't support, condone, or give any credence to that system at all. I agree. I think it's a sham, right?
Yeah, and it's like the old saying, you can't see the woods for the trees. You know, people are standing with their nose to the bark in the middle of the woods. Is this an elm? Is it an oak? Is it a pine? Is it a maple? Is it a, you know, you got to go back to the nearest tall hill, big hill, till you can see the woods and get your perspective. Then you can go back in and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have blinders on, like the horse with the blinders on.
Yeah, and of course that led me down the road of, you know, all of the you know, standard and, you know, known folks, right? You know, Rothbard and, you know, all of the, you know, authors and historical figures that had figured this out, which led me a little bit further into Lysander Spooner, which led me a little further into Friedrich Bastiat, et cetera, et cetera. And the more you go and start really looking into this, the more you realize that this, number one, is not new. This has always been the game. It's mm-hmm. always been the game. Mm-hmm. And number two, you realize that you're brought into this and you are given lies through omission that lead you to believe that this is a valid and you right. know, correct system. And it's the best thing ever. And, you know, oh my gosh, we're so free. And, it, you know, it's funny, you know, I run across a constitutionalist every once in a while and I just ask them, well, you know, first off, which version, right? You know, at which point? But even if you go back to the original, you know, 10 amendments and the Bill of Rights and, you know, you go through the Constitution, if you go back to that, name one of our rights that hasn't been thoroughly and totally and completely trampled on and bastardized at this point. Oh,
totally. You can't.
Yeah. No.
What I like to say, you know, Connecticut calls itself the Constitution State. That's what it says on the license plate, right? So you go to Connecticut with a bucket full of $1 bills and you stand in a shopping center and everybody comes by and say, hey, if you can name any three of the 10 First Amendments of the Constitution, you don't have to quote them verbatim. Just, you know, give me the essence so you understand what they mean. There's a free dollar in it for you. You'll go home with a bucket full of dollar bills.
Oh, yeah.
That's the condition that we have today. And these people, as I said earlier, and they all vote. They vote locally. They vote at the state level, and they vote federally.
And there was actually some, you know, if you look at the framers, right, and you look at some of the things that they did, like number one, like you had to be a property owner, a land owner.
Skin in the game.
You had to actually be a part of to actually vote. There were some good ideas, right? Yep. Just I tend to side more with the anti-federalists. This is going to go bad. It always does. It always has. Historically, there's never, ever been an occasion where, you know, giving power to a federal type of entity didn't end up exactly where we are today. So, you know, my statement to them is, what exactly makes you think going back to that would make it any different? What did we get, like, you know, a 50-year reprieve before it starts getting bad again? I mean, you know, it's a hard one to take for a lot of people.
Well, reality is,
I know what you're thinking, Havoc. You're thinking if we could fix this, we just had more government, right?
Oh gosh, yes. That was exactly where I was going with this.
I'm sure that's where you were going with that.
More oversight, more bureaucracies, more committees,
right.
Mm-hmm. More hearings. Well,
when I homeschooled the kids, we read the Federalist Papers and we read the Anti-Federalist Papers. Understand both sides of the argument.
And I bet your kids can even tell time on a hand with or on a clock with hands.
They can.
Like, unlike most of the
they can even kids they can even do basic math days. On a calculator. It's unbelievable.
They can probably read cursive.
Even. It's you're absolutely right. They can even write their name in cursive. Just don't do it in front of your friends. They'll think it's like black magic or something. Like
right. What exactly?
What is that? You know, like invoking the devil? No, it's just my name.
Is that Arabic?
Yeah. Yeah, well,
oh, man.
So where do we go from here? We've just, now that we've solved all the world's problems, what do we talk about next?
Well, I don't know that we've solved them, but we surely have identified some of the key areas of concern. I think honestly, I could probably talk about this stuff for hours, right? Without question, not probably. I absolutely could. It's very near and dear to my heart. But that being said, in the interest of time, et cetera, let's go ahead and start wrapping things up a little bit. And one of the questions we always like to ask our guests is, we appreciate you very much for giving us your time, right? And of course, audience, we very much appreciate you for giving us some of your time. Throughout our lives, we are impacted by an individual. It could be an author, a sixth grade science teacher, historical figure, could be mom. But we like to give our guests an opportunity to shout out that person that was influential to them.
Well, you blew my big announcement earlier.
Oh no!
Because I told you before we started recording, it's Lysander Spooner.
Mm.
Lysander Spooner. Well, I would say that David Henry Thoreau is right up there in the same altitude. But as far as shifting in Bastiat and Hazlitt, there's a bunch of them. I've read about 5,000 books since I was 30 years old. And here we go again. I can't tell. It's so high pitched, you can't tell where it's coming from. But there's probably about 20 or 30 of those books that are at the very top of the reading pile. And certainly the ones, Constitution of No Authority, Treason, No Treason, the Constitution of No Authority is right up there. Yeah, but reading Spooner just took the top of my head off. I realized that one person, a friend of mine, took it to an extreme. He said, "Are you even an American?" I said, "Okay. You were born on this landmass through no effort of your own. They now claim you as a taxpayer on their farm, on their territory. You can't come and go without paperwork. You don't do what they say, they can imprison you. And aren't you really just a human living on this little, mostly water, blue, beautiful ball of water going around the sun? And as I taught my kids, why are we here? The only reason you're here is to help each other, period. I don't care if you're tall, short, fat, ugly, black, white, purple. I don't quite care less what you believe in or don't believe in. Pick a religion, have fun. I don't care. They're all this. You're here to help other people. That's it. And government does not act in that interest. It's here to help itself. Government is a multi-celled organism, which understandably, like all organisms, seeks to survive and to preserve itself at all costs. And that's what it will do when, as one writer put, when the effluvium hits the rotary airfoil. Because I'm being very polite. Okay? That's what it will do, and the heck with the rest of us. We're out there to fend for ourselves. And it gets back to agorism, anarchy in its truest understanding, taking care of ourselves and being empowering ourselves within our heart, our soul, our spirit, our core, and then expanding that to the ones we love and care about in our immediate tribe, if you want to call it that. But I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So you've written a book. Where can people find you? Where can they tune in? What have you got going on? What are you working on next?
Well, thank you. The book is called The Risky Reader. The subtitle is Essays on Fallen Freedoms, Cultural Collapse, and the New America. And you can go to theriskyreader.com. There it is. You can buy it on Amazon. You can read a few chapters for free. There's some embarrassingly nice reviews I've already gotten that I posted on there. And forgive the cover. It looks like it was designed by a fifth grader, which is me. I'm not a graphic artist. I'm having somebody professionally work on a new cover. But it's a compilation of essays I wrote over a 30-year period. And I think I'll be happy to send a PDF to you gentlemen if you want to share your email addresses.
Absolutely. I would love that.
Yeah, I'd love to send it to you.
Yeah, I did actually go and read the, it said four chapters, and I'm not certain those are full chapters, but snippets of chapters. Yeah. And I would be very interested.
I'd love to do that. And as far as the work that I do, I'm kind of a semi-retired. You notice I didn't say retarded. I said semi-retired. And so the consulting that I do, not as much as I used to, is family financial risk management. And you can go to gordonphillips.me, like me, gordonphillips.me. Two O's in Gordon, two L's in Phillips. Click away. You'll see the services that I offer, what I do. I'm more than happy to book a complimentary Zoom with anybody. No sales, no pressure, just like talking like we are right now, just a friendly conversation. Who are you? Where are you in life? What are your concerns, issues, problems, challenges? Can I help? Let's talk about that. And then we'll see if we take the next step. If not, we're still friends. And that's a good way to get. Yeah, you can go to schedulewithgordon.com and takes you right to my Google Calendar. And if any of those times don't work for you, then get in touch with me at the contact page on the website and we'll figure out something that does. And that's what I do.
Wonderful. So Risky Reader, theriskyreader.com.
Theriskyreader.com.
And gordonphillips.me.
Yes, sir.
Gordonphillips.me.
Yeah, dot me. That's me.
Go check him out. Book a session. Talk to him. I will endorse you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we met. We're obviously fellow travelers.
Absolutely.
And this is the darndest thing because I've never done podcasts before. 30 years ago, I did a ton of radio as a guest.
Oh, really?
Flying around the country, guesting on talk radio prior to the internet. Yeah. But I decided to just sign up with a podcast service to promote the book, you know, to get the book out there.
Absolutely.
And I've met, you guys are great. You really are. I'm not just trying to falsely flatter. You guys are really great. I've had a very, very varied experience with hosts. Mm-hmm. Some have been really great. Some have been interesting. Let's put it that way. But we're obviously fellow travelers. And the takeaway is we're all connected and we're all here to help each other.
Absolutely.
And it's so important to create a network. Your network can be physical, local, but it can also be dispersed and remote, virtual, so to speak. You know, but we all need each other. Absolutely. We all need each other.
Absolutely. So. Developing that tribe and keeping those people around you of like-minded individuals is of critical importance in my eyes.
You know, I agree. I agree.
Awesome. Alex, anything to wrap up with?
I got the rest of the night. I don't know where you guys are going.
I'm probably going to make dinner.
There you go. Probably go outside and shoot it and then make dinner, right?
Well, you know,
Possibly.
We've got plenty of stuff in freezer camp, so.
I believe it.
We'll probably use that.
And plenty of solar panels to back it up, right? Yeah.
Well, no solar panels yet, but that's on task for hopefully this year.
Yeah. Good for you.
But we're off almost every other, well, not almost, we're off every other service. So with the exception of internet. So.
Well, Havoc, it's been a pleasure. I don't know how to pronounce LX. Is it LX?
Just LX.
Just LX.
LX. LX. LX. Okay. I like that. It's kind of like when Prince became, the artist represented by the Ankh symbol, you know, like you could go there, you know, to
formerly known.
Maybe that's
as LX.
Next.
Formerly known as as LX.
Yeah,
the anarchist formerly known as LX.
Absolutely.
I'm not the anarchist.
No. I'm sorry, that's what an insult. I didn't mean to imply that.
That's me. I'm an anarchist. Unabashed,
you're
unashamed.
You're,
I am 100%. I fall into the individualist category of said. beliefs, ideology.
The available buffet of belief systems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. A little of this, a little of that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Gordon, Mr. Phillips, it's been wonderful having you on the show. It really has. And I would absolutely love to have you back at a later date. I think we have topics that we could go on for days about.
I agree. I'd love to. Thank you. It's been an honor. I mean that sincerely. I've had a blast. This has been a really fun hour and a half. Awesome. It's refreshing. It's like validating, like, thank you, Jesus. There are other people out there who think the way I do. You're not alone, Gordon. You know, like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah, that was actually a huge thing for me, was finding people that, because for a while there, I kind of felt like I'm all alone here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody thinks like this. And then finding people and you find more, and it's refreshing. It is.
Well, I'd love to do this again. Let's share email addresses. You know how to get in touch with me through the podcast platform, right?
Yes, sir.
So you give me your email address. I'll write to you. And I'll send you guys a copy of the book, and we can stay in touch. I'd love to do this again. It would be my pleasure.
Wonderful. Awesome. Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you very much for giving us some of your time. We really appreciate it. And thank you for giving us some of your time as well. If you find value in our work, let us know. Support us. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a thumbs down. If you didn't like us, leave a comment. Tell us we sucked. Do what you got to do. We'll respond. Hey, that's a nice thing. You can find us pretty much everywhere. Right? We are hosted now off Fountain.fm, which is a podcast 2.0 application, which allows you, if you choose to and would like to contribute to our work. And if not, you can just go there and listen. We're also on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podbean, this, that, the other thing. We are everywhere. Go find us. And remember, wherever you are, whenever you're watching this, have an amazing day.